If you're looking for the best horror, thriller, sci-fi, and WTF audio fiction this side of the apocalypse, then you should listen to The Other Stories. With over 500 stories on the podcast feed already, and new stories dropping every single Monday morning, The Other Stories is your new best friend. Check out The Other Stories today on any and all podcast platforms, or head to theotherstories.net. After all, these aren't the stories your mother used to tell you. These are The Other Stories.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where some bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
And today we have a very special guest. We have Gemma Moore. She's the Bram Stoker Award-nominated author of Dear Laura, Cruel Works of Nature, Till the Score is Paid, and White Pines. She's also a podcaster, illustrator, and voice actor, and is based in Bristol. Hey, Gemma.
Hello.
Where?
Bristol Massive.
That's where you're from, Ben.
I know. I think we're at different ends of Bristol. Is that correct, Gemma?
Are you south of the river? I think I'm north. I am north.
I'm south of the river.
South of the river sounds like the dodgy part.
It's not.
I mean, definitely.
It's the more interesting part.
I don't know about that. It might be the more dodgy part. Definitely where I live anyway. Where I was born and raised, you know? Can you tell? Maybe. I don't know.
There's like a long-standing north-south rivalry, isn't there, that like used to feature in all the local papers and stuff. And,
Does that mean we've got to fight to the death at some point?
I think so. I think that's exactly what it means. Yeah.
Well, understandable. Yeah, you can only grab something that's close by as well. So I've got, I don't know, a lamp, a bottle of water. No, none of it's any good. Got any good weapons nearby, Luke?
I can't understand anything you guys are saying. It's all Bristolian.
Cheeky monkey.
You just dropped into local dialect.
Cheeky monkey. I'm not even born and bred Bristol. I'm from Norfolk, so.
Are you really?
Well, if that's the case, Gemma, then let's just end it here, shall we?
Let's get my thing to go. I'm from the Fenlands. So
I don't know that much about Norfolk. Norfolk Broads from the David Bowie song and Queen Boudica. Is that how you pronounce it, Boudica?
Think so, yeah.
Someone pronounced it weird on a podcast, and I thought, have I been pronouncing it wrong?
I think you can say Boudica as well, but I have a feeling Boudica is more accurate. I don't know.
I don't know what that is.
Well, I'm not up with Bronze Age names and bits and pieces. She was she was a famous like tribal leader from that part of like the east of England, her remains were like discovered with a chariot and stuff, and she was, I think it was with a chariot, she was like a famous warrior lady. Very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I just think of Alan Partridge's Norfolk Knights radio show.
Oh, Alan Partridge, of course. I know of Alan Partridge as well.
You've heard of him. You've heard of him, that's good.
Yeah.
How's everyone doing now? Everybody enjoying themselves? Everybody having a lovely week? What of lockdown? What number of week are we in? Who stopped counting a long time ago?
I just stopped counting ages ago. I'm experienced. This is the first like couple of weeks in a row where I've really struggled with lockdown fatigue now. Like it's starting to drag because we're in the final stretch or one of the final stretches. Who knows? And it's like you can see all these tantalizing things that we can do in the distance, like go and sit in someone else's house or go and have dinner, go and have a coffee, normal stuff, you know, not have to hang around in the park in the freezing cold. And I'm so bored of parks, and I like being outdoors. And it's just like, I can see it there on the horizon, but I can't get to it. Not yet.
At least we can see it now. We can't get to it, because before we couldn't see the end of it. It was almost like not knowing when it was going to end was what I was struggling with the most. But now there is some sort of... But I'm not 100% convinced, not just yet. When festivals are coming out and saying, look, our tickets are on sale and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, nope, there's no way I'm going anywhere near.
Yeah, I know exactly how you feel. And I don't know about you, but my mood in the last couple of weeks since like the coming out of all of this was announced by Boris, my mood has just been up and down and up and down, because I get excited about something and then I'm like, oh no, I can't get excited about that yet, because nobody knows what the future will hold. And it's like the uncertainty of it is terrible. I mean, I think particularly if you have like pre-existing mental health conditions as well, which I kind of struggle with a little bit, it's kind of taken all of those and just blown everything up by like 1,000, magnified it all. So I'm feeling the strain a bit at the moment, really, hence drinking a lot more than I probably should, and eating a lot more cake.
Lots of creative endeavours to throw yourself into, though, yeah? That's got to be something that helps with...
There's always the work.
And joining us on podcasts... Joining two idiots. Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus there. That was mean, wasn't it?
Yeah,
sorry. On a podcast to talk about
films. This is what they call bants, isn't it? This is proper bants.
this is proper bants.
Too stupid to know. Apparently,
I'm too old.
Luke just comes off the end of the podcast just all a bit down, and he's like, "Was that bants? Did I enjoy that? Was that fun? I don't know."
You've got pokes in the feelings.
I think that's what bants are supposed
to feel
be.
Right now.
I think you've got to feel like at least 25% attacked after bants for it to.
Think if anybody attacked me at the moment, I'd probably burst into tears. We're at that stage now where it's like the slightest thing could be misconstrued.
Good defense mechanism, I find. Burst into tears.
My husband would walk in the room and ask me like a really simple question about like whether or not I want broccoli with dinner, and I have been known to just literally burst into tears for like no reason.
Broccoli
whatsoever.
Isn't good
just,
to some people, though.
It's just an emotional thing for me, you know. These little florets, they're just.
I never know how small to cut it. I'm always like, when I cook it, do I cut it in the tiny bits? Do I cut it in big bits? Full florets? I don't know. It's
too many
a minefield.
Choices. Just tell me what to do, nature. Tell me what to do.
Yeah, just go and eat it straight off the supermarket shelf.
Don't get that with frozen peas, do you? The frozen peas are the simple, straightforward vegetable.
You know where you stand with frozen peas. I feel
you
the same
do.
Like green beans. Just
yeah.
A little handful.
You say you prefer your broccoli by the leaf, by the tiny little leaf.
By the clump. This is not where I thought this conversation would go this evening. I'm sorry. It's my fault.
It will go in a lot of different directions. Some expected, some not so expected, some terrifying.
Shall we direct it towards horror-related stuff? Is there any horror news, Ben?
There's a little bit of horror news. Again, quite thin on the ground. And I really do hate to bring this up again, because I feel like we've mentioned it on this podcast probably for over a year now, but...
Candyman.
A Quiet Place 2. Nearly. A Quiet Place 2 has apparently been... It got moved to September 2021. Apparently now it's been brought... It's going to be out in theatres on May 28th, Memorial Day weekend. So I'm assuming just in the US.
Memorial Day weekend.
Ooh, we bloody memorial... Yeah. And so originally planned for release March 20th, 2020. Which is... I mean, I'm kind of like sick... of it's gone so far that I'm like, I don't even want to watch it anymore.
I just watched The Office again all the way through, so I'm quite excited to see Jim.
Oh, right.
I know he's dead, isn't he?
What?
Spoiler alert, but he's not going to be in this one, is he?
I haven't seen it, shut up.
Spoiler alert, yeah, massive spoiler alert for that film, which we did cover on this podcast, but maybe he'll appear in some form. He's directing it, though, isn't he? So maybe you'll feel him, you'll sense him. In that way, they can't delay it again, can they? Because it's going to get to a point where just don't bother in it. Just delete the film. Just find the files, all the actual source. Delete the film. Don't even bother releasing it. But yeah, May 28th could be exciting. I'm quite excited to go back to the cinema at whatever point that will be. What was the last film everybody saw on the big screen? Do you remember?
Oh my God, I can't even remember. I think
might have been Invisible Man for me.
Invisible Man was February, wasn't it? 2020. So that's probably a good shout.
It was Birds of Prey. For me.
Oh yeah, that was February as well.
It was a cracking good thing to see in the cinema, actually. It was big screen treatment. I think that's the thing, though, isn't it? Like, some people are pushing back their releases because they genuinely believe that you need that cinema experience. And I reckon the Candyman remake is a, like, culturally, that's a bit of an event as well because of the new narrative and the new themes and stuff that it deals with. And I feel like it does deserve its day in the cinema. Like, streaming is fine. And it is fine, but we watched Wonder Woman 84, you know, as a kind of cinematic release thing. And it doesn't have the same impact. You know, you're not held captive by the screen. You are just sat there. And it didn't kind of hold my interest the whole way through anyway, because I found the writing a bit problematic on that one. So you're just scrolling on your phone and, you know, it is a waste. Like, whereas if you're in the cinema, even if it isn't the best movie in the world, unless you're an absolutely awful human being, you're not sat there on your phone in the cinema, so you are giving it your full attention. Like, yeah. I do understand wanting to hang out and wait for that. Like, the Bond movie is, like, kind of delayed as well, isn't it? And I get why. I think because those things are meant to be an event. Like,
the Bond films, like, make a lot of money all over the world as well, don't they? So that's probably the reason why they want to delay that. But yeah, well, I managed to get to the cinema. Like, every time lockdown eased and cinemas were open, I did kind of manage to squeeze
it. No, I did as well. Forgot about that.
Yeah.
See Tenet in that.
What was that?
Tenet, I think, might have been the last one.
Oh, Tenet. When you said that, I was like, what? You saw what? And I saw Wonder Woman. That was the last thing I saw on the big screen. When they opened the cinema for, like, I don't know, 6 hours once.
I missed that window.
Get in! Get in and watch it! Get in and watch it! Well, I'm trying. There's no time for popcorn! Get in there! Oh.
Just throw popcorn at your mouth as you walk by them.
Yeah, that's what I do. It's just like a grenade of popcorn in your face. If you catch what you get, it still costs you 12 quid. What else? There's a bit of thin on the ground. So, Olivia Wilde has shared the first look at her Florence Pugh starring psychological horror movie, Don't Worry, Darling, which is a brief log line. 1950s housewife living with her husband in a utopian experimental community begins to worry that his glamorous company may be hiding disturbing secrets. It's got Florence Pugh in it, Harry Styles, Chris Pine, Gemma Chan, directed by Olivia Wilde. I know I mentioned that, but going from Booksmart to this, bit nuts, but, you know, pretty cool. I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, I've heard Booksmart is really good. I've not seen it, though.
Booksmart is good. Have you seen it, Gemma?
No, I haven't. It's on my list of... I don't get to consume as much stuff as I would like. Books, movies. The only thing I do listen to more than... the only thing I do consume more than anything else is podcasts, because I can do it while I'm doing something else.
I've got
a long list of things I want to catch up on as soon as I get 5 minutes away from doing all the things, you know? Doing the things.
Doing all those things.
All the things.
I just try and squeeze in my movie watching, like, late at night, but probably too late because... I just lull myself into this false sense of security. I could definitely watch a 2-hour film. 10 minutes in, heavy eyes. I'm like, I'll persevere through this. Come on, you can do it.
Do you find yourself watching a lot of movies in two chunks?
Yes.
Like it's a TV show. Like, you'll watch a bit at night and then...
I resent that, though. I do resent that. Having to pick it up the next day, I feel a little bit annoyed. It feels like a dirty little secret. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'll watch the second half of this film, then watch the rest. So sometimes I do persevere. But probably, one in every 4 or 5 movies I probably do have to watch in two chunks.
If I start watching a movie anytime after 10, it's likely to happen.
10. 10's dangerous. Fall asleep. I was kind of feeling it with this one a little bit because I put this one on just after 10.
Mm-hmm.
And probably about an hour in, I was
this
a bit
movie
like...
is paced, shall we say.
Yeah. Black and white was making me tired as well. What's that about? That's weird. Very dreamy. What else we got? So, don't know if you guys saw the zombie Korean TV show Kingdom on Netflix, South Korean zombie samurai warriors stuff. It was really good, really kind of unique, but apparently they're releasing a special episode of it on its way this year. And they've released a couple of teaser images, which looks kind of badass.
Yeah. You've brought it up a couple of times. I will watch it at some point. I'm just not quite there with zombies yet.
There's another show on Netflix called Kingdom, which is apparently like a UFC fighter show. Yeah. And the amount of times I've heard somebody say, oh, Kingdom on Netflix is great. And then I get ready to like launch into my, I love Kingdom so much, it's so great.
What about zombies, eh? And they're like,
and then, yeah, I go, well, about those Korean zombies then? How do you feel about that? And they'll go, you what? It's a ultimate fighting show, you idiot. And I'll go, what? Yeah, so it's a bit disappointing. Really well made and just like looks amazing and is really like action packed and kind of gives, because everyone's had enough of zombies, I guess. So it gives the whole zombie thing something nice and unique as well, because there's loads of little unique little touches they add to it. So
I haven't had enough of zombies. I love zombies. I love all of that. I don't care how hacked. That's not the right word, is it? Hacky? I can't even speak. Hack-eyed. I'm Stacker Award nominated author, ladies and gentlemen. what's the word? Hack-y. There is a word for that you will know Hammy. That I can't Hammy. Summon to mind. But it's been done a lot. That's what I'm trying to get to. Yeah. I should probably get a drink. That might help. And it's like, I just doesn't bother me. I love it. I think it's the only subgenre of horror where I don't mind the tropes again and again and again, because it's just enjoyable. You know, it's like comfort blanket horror. And it's apart from Train to Busan, which broke my heart in too many places. Now
there's
I can't watch it
again. Nothing comforting about that film.
No.
That's scary in more than one way. Getting on a train, scary enough.
Yeah.
Zombies on it as well. Gonna miss it. Yeah. And there's zombies on it. What stressed me out about that is that the main character's daughter's on the train with him, and I just kept thinking, well, that's just like a horrible situation to
couldn't
be
do
in.
It.
No, couldn't
no,
do it. At all.
That's a whole lot of broccoli for me. That was a train full of broccoli, and it was
train full of broccoli just turned up. Wow.
It was a good film. I love that. I do love that film, and I totally understand the love for it. But I don't think I can watch it again. I need some frozen peas.
Please. Yeah. Did you see the sequel, that Peninsula?
No.
Not very good. It was like they kind of turned it into Fast and the Furious. That sounds mad. I know, but yeah, wow. Okay. What was I going to say about it? Oh yeah, zombies for me. The reason I kind of fell out of love with it is because I persevered with The Walking Dead for so long.
Oh.
I love the comics, and I saw a meme the other day which was like, "Don't tell me where you're from or what star sign you are. Tell me where you gave up on The Walking Dead. I'll know all I need to know about you."
Yeah,
and I think mine was the tail end of series 7, possibly.
I stuck it out there for Negan's storyline. I think is where most people started to tail off after Glenn was so brutally taken from us. Abraham?
Yeah.
I stuck with it for a few more episodes thinking, where is this going to go? And then I started to sort of, I've seen a lot of other people say the same. Like for me, I liked the fact that people were kind of, it had a real Darabont feel at the beginning and like, characters that kind of came together and the unlikable characters, but characters that worked as a team and they were kind of prevailing against like the odds. And then as it went through each series, it just became more about humans doing unkind, horrible things to each other. And I know that that was in the comics, and I know Negan's a massive part of the comic like universe and stuff, but on screen it just didn't play as well for me because it was just relentless and so grim, and I just wanted, I don't know. I couldn't after a while. I should probably go back and pick up where I left off. And I tried Fear the Walking Dead for a bit as well.
Yeah.
But sort of. Mm. Yeah.
I only saw a few episodes of that. I think The Walking Dead was good at introducing interesting characters, or it kind of had good villains, but it felt like it didn't know what to do with it. Like the conflict, I always found was a bit like naff. I didn't always feel fully invested in it. With Negan as well, like, all I could really remember about him is the fact that he was always leaning back when he was talking. He was always, like, reclining, but there was no recliner in sight. And I'm like, are you all right? Is your spine okay, Jeffrey Dean Morgan? Because I am worried.
He's a tall chap.
A chiropractor. Maybe that's why. Yeah, chap. He had to get into shot each time. He's just like, are you sure to say you want to set up the shot? Because I'm a tall guy. Just lean back. Just lean into it. Nice. Yeah. I don't know when it's due to end because I think they're on series 10 now.
I didn't know it was still going. I've only seen one episode.
Well, we're still going.
It was okay. But
you've only seen one episode.
Yeah. But I was more into more into the comics and I just kind of just carried on with those.
Sorry, go on, Gemma.
No, go ahead.
I felt the same with the comics where the conflict that they kept introducing every, mm-hmm. Arc, every story arc, I just wasn't invested in it. It was just like the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Find somewhere nice to live. Someone else is not so nice. They want to take that place.
Well, there was the time jump in that, and that was a good sort of opt out.
Okay. Is that when they time jumped and Negan get prisoner?
Yeah.
And there we go. And the last thing I've got is Stranger Things creators are teaming with Steven Spielberg to adapt Stephen King's The Talisman.
Oh,
yeah. Very interesting. I did pick up Stephen King's new book today, actually. He's done another like hard-boiled crime thriller. What's it called?
Later, I think, isn't it?
I've literally bought it 3 hours ago and I've forgotten what it's called. So that should be good. Have you guys read The Talisman? Because I don't think I have.
I have. Okay. Yeah.
I haven't. Black House. Is it Black House? I've got the sequel on my bookshelf and I keep thinking, I really want to read that, but I better get The Talisman first.
Yeah, and that's with Straub, isn't it?
Okay.
That's interesting because has there been a Spielberg King, another Spielberg King movie? I was trying to think that when I heard the news. I couldn't put my finger, because Darabont did a lot of King movies back in the 90s. It was like Green Mile and Mist. And then obviously Flanagan kind of took up the mantle and has done an awful lot of adaptations. But I was trying to think.
Flanagan was linked to do Revival, wouldn't he? And then.
Yeah, is that not going ahead now?
That's going ahead now. No. Oh, well, when I search it, the first story is almost collaborations between Stephen King and Steven Spielberg.
I mean, I'm excited because I can't imagine anyone better placed to kind of do King the full justice, especially with a story like Talisman, where it's just there's so much. Like that is that the one with the five friends in the hut in the woods? And no, that's Dreamcatcher. I'm thinking of Dreamcatcher. Sorry.
Dreamcatcher.
Did Spielberg do that?
Yeah.
I think he did. Yeah.
No. I don't know. Apparently not.
Lawrence
Kasdan, yeah. Oh, that's a film I've not seen in a long, long time.
No, I was just reminding myself of it. Yeah, I was thinking, a Spielberg remake of that would be awesome. But actually, no, I haven't read The Talisman. I've read Dreamcatcher. Yeah. So take it all back.
Well, there we go. I'll look forward to that in any sense. That's all I've got for horror news, unfortunately, unless anybody else has seen anything.
Not really, but I've not been looking, so that could be the issue.
That's what happens, you see. Don't look, you don't see.
I was too busy watching the Planet of the Apes movies, because...
Were you?
Yeah, well, I mean, it took up so much time. There's three of them, the new trilogy. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and then War for the Planet of the Apes. You were right. They're all great. Like, the second two particularly are really good. It's just a really solid trilogy. I can't think of another trilogy recently that kind of fits. They're so cohesive. It sort of comes together so well. I mean, we get sort of see the story right from the start.
And how does it make you feel, knowing that the director of those films is now directing The Batman? Excited. I'm putting words in your mouth.
Well, I don't know. I guess so. Who's Andy Serkis going to be doing in the Batman movie?
Who's he not going to be doing? He's going to do it everywhere. He's going to be doing the scenery. He's going to put a mocap suit on and he's going to be the Batcave. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. The movies. After seeing these, I'm quite excited for everything that Matt Reeves does because they were just so well put together, like so confidently done.
Do you feel like they're named in the wrong order? Which is how
there's Rise.
Yeah.
Well, this is the prequel to the originals, right? So Rise is the first one, and then Dawn, and then War.
War should be the middle one. Because
especially given the events in the film, I feel like the middle one has a war, more of a war in it.
Yeah, then, I follow that. They're still great. I think they're all really solid. Have you seen these films, Gemma?
Is this with Angry Caesar? That's all I remember, is there was a really angry Caesar.
Yeah.
CG was really angry.
Calm down, Caesar, for God's sake. Chill out.
I don't know why. But like the CG looked cross, you know, like there's the level of detail and the colour and the...
Oh, I've really got that miffed. His angry, hairy thing.
I have seen them. Yeah, I do. Maybe I haven't seen the most recent one, but I've definitely seen the other two. One of them's got that kid from Harry Potter in, haven't they? Malfoy. Growing up Malfoy.
It's the first one. Right.
No, I thought they were well put together. They were definitely way more serious and much more rage filled on steroids than the kind of Charlton Heston movies from back in the day. But what's not to love about Helena Bonham Carter as a clever genius scientist ape?
Do you know what? I was always terrified by Helena Bonham Carter in her ape makeup. In her ape makeup. Like something about her. I don't know why. I just couldn't quite look directly at her in the film. I don't know why. I just felt like, I don't know how I feel about you.
She carried it off, though. She's probably one of the few actresses that could carry it off in a convincing,
way. Is that a compliment, or is that Tim Roth is in it as well, isn't he? As the general.
Oh yeah, doesn't he go like a bit Deadpool on them as well, and just like jack himself up on drugs or something? I can't remember. I don't remember movies as well as I need to. Doesn't he become really like enraged and big and hulky? Am I getting confused with Hulk?
Yeah, but I'm getting that in the Hulk as well.
Yeah, he does do that in the Hulk. Yeah. Maybe that's just his MO. Maybe he's like, well, I become big and enraged in this film. Well, I haven't written it in. Add it to the script.
Isn't
Pulp Fiction, yeah.
As long as you're going to regret asking me on, it'll be like a whole, you'll get to the end of this. You're like, oh my God. Next.
Mark Wahlberg as well, looking great in that Planet of the Apes movie. I'm just naming everybody who was in that film, it would seem. But yeah, Marky Mark, he loves it, doesn't he? Have you seen anything else, Luke, apart from
That's funny. I've been playing some games. I just talked bad about zombies, and I'm playing a zombie game, Days Gone, and it is really good. Zombies in particular are really good.
Hordes, right?
You're sorry?
Hordes of zombies.
Yeah, that's the best thing about it, is there's parts where they're quite easy to pick off one by one, but because you find yourself exploring a lot. If you go down the wrong tunnel or whatever, and you find yourself suddenly surrounded by a horde of zombies, it really captures that feeling of, I don't know, you genuinely feel scared about getting into that situation. Yeah.
Haven't you got to keep your motorbike finely tuned as well, is that correct? You've got to be a mechanic.
Yeah. The other day, my motorbike broke. I wasn't near anywhere, so I had to run across the map without my bike, my trusty motorbike, and it was painful. So you do want to look after your motorbike if you play Days Gone. Yeah. It's good. I think it's a really good game. It got a lot of slack when it came out, but it is good.
I've got it, because I think I bought it on sale, and I would like to play it. I will get around to that. I've been playing the Avengers game, which is like kind of mind numbing. It's just button mashing. But I've just unlocked Black Widow and play it like everything else is like you just feel like you're smashing everything. Hulk, Thor, every other character. But Black Widow plays like a cross between Tim Roth. Black Widow plays like a cross between Batman and Lara Croft. Mm-hmm. And it's just so satisfying. She's got like dual wielding guns. She's got like a grapple. It's just good times. But yeah, you can be every character essentially, but it's all right, I suppose.
Yeah. What about you, Gem? Have you watched anything, read anything good?
Well, it's just interesting. The video game thing always makes me chuckle a bit because I've beyond my Sega Mega Drive when I was a kid, I've not had a console. I love the Mega Drive. I was a big Mega Drive nerd, but I've never had a console since then. So I see a lot of gamer kind of talk online and stuff, and I've always felt a bit left out. So this year we finally got an Xbox, mostly because my son really wants to play Minecraft and badgered us into it, and now we don't let him play it because it overstimulates him too much, so we... never mind. But so I've started playing games, and I wanted to play all the horror games, but I don't. Yeah. The controls are quite hard for me to get used to because they're like super sensitive, and I'm finding I'm getting a bit of motion sickness as I'm playing like first person shooter games and stuff like that. So I'm learning. I'm learning as every day. But I stupidly we've got a Game Pass, so I downloaded the newest Resident Evil game, 7, is it? I can't remember.
Seven
not
is
played
scary.
Any of the others.
And 7 is so terrifying.
I'm like, the game kind of eases in when you're just kind of wandering around this nasty, spooky house, and it's all right for like the first hour or two of gameplay because I'm slow as well. And then it's just insanely violent. It's so violent. And I'm just like, and I get so scared by what's happening that I can't like function and control anything. So I've just tried about like 3 or 4 times to play the game. And every time something's
scary.
That's
going in pretty hardcore.
Like every time something scary happens now, I get my husband to come in and do that bit. And he's just like, la, 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 la. Okay, there you go. Hands the controls back. Yeah. And then I carry on going. So I always feel like an absolute nerd, like when people have game conversations, because I'm just not a natural gamer, but I'm learning and I'm easing myself into it. And it is quite fun. There are other games that you sort of switch to when you can't handle the stress of Resident Evil. It's so stressful.
That is a game that you overcome. Like, you put it on your CV when you finished it because it feels like such an achievement.
I would consider myself a seasoned horror gamer, but even that had me shaken many times. I think Luke played in VR as well, didn't you?
I played a bit of VR, yeah. That was almost too much.
So I've only made it to the stage where I've been kidnapped by the freaky family in the house, and I keep trying to get away from the nasty shovel-wielding father figure, and I can't quite get around him to get to where I need to go without having my brains battered out by his shovel. It's horrible.
There's some like moments in that game, like Ben, you know, when you go into the thing and the, I don't want to spoil anything,
the thing and the thing, you can spoil it might make it easier for me.
Well, there's a bit when you're downstairs and then there's like stuff on the walls that come dropping off, peeling away from the walls that's in the shadows. The imagery is so scary, like I'll never ever forget that feeling of those things coming out of the shadows towards me.
It is a properly scary game, and I think I started, like most things in life, I aimed too high, too quickly. So I need to just... I am playing, is it Call of the Sea, Call of the Ocean? What's that one? It's like a puzzle game, explore game. That's quite nice. It's quite nice and genteel.
I think you've got to switch between genres sometimes, especially when you're playing horror games. You can't let that be exclusively what you play because you're just on edge all the time. You're just like trying to make a cup of tea. You're just like
it's the controls thing, because I'm not used to it. I just it's a bit like when I was learning to drive, and in a panic situation my brain just locks and freezes. They say you have like fight, flight or freeze, and I'm a freeze. In any bad situation, I just, everything stops working, which is not great for video games. So.
Or driving, but you know.
Yeah, or driving. Well, I don't really drive much anymore. There's nowhere to go.
There sure isn't. Anything else? Anybody watch anything else at all?
I watched this movie that you guys sent me. I also watched Impetigore a couple of days ago, which is awesome. Gem of a movie.
I really liked it. Yeah.
And I've just noticed, just now, that Saint Maud and His House have both been BAFTA nominated, which is very worthy and very good. Although we need some more horror movies on there, but it's a good start.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I haven't actually seen the BAFTA nominations yet, so I'll go and check them out afterwards.
His House won the BIFA, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Pretty good stand in.
His House was a stunning movie, and I think particularly as a Brit, like we know how difficult some of these issues are with kind of refugees trying to make a better life for themselves over here, and also you see it from the other side here. You see the racism and the nastiness directed towards people who are just trying to get away from something horrendous and start a new life. And it's like, it was double layered for me, because the film presents it through his eyes and that family's eyes, but you're also you're putting your own kind of knowledge of the experience they'll find when they get over to England on top of that as well. And just there are a couple of scenes in that movie that just made me really just like all my insides clench. Like I just couldn't bear it. So yeah, well done.
A very interesting twist as well, because I think you approach the film from one angle, and when you find out the twist, you kind of you're made to go back to how you felt about it originally, and kind of like reassess that.
Yeah,
which is good.
I think. Also, I'm just thinking about it now. It's making I appreciate that. Not all the English characters are bastards. Like you think about most of them are, but then there's the guy in the pub. When they're like all singing songs together.
Yeah, and that welcoming. Was one of those moments, and I was clenched thinking, oh, this is all going to go horribly wrong, you know? And then it doesn't, and that was actually a real relief. Like, he was just allowed to sit in the pub, you know, and have his little moment.
Yeah. And have a biscuit.
Yeah. But then the other moment was where she's walking across the basketball pitch or whatever it is, and she's lost, and she asks a group of lads for directions. And they're just so horrible to her. And I just couldn't bear it. I literally had to like go and make a cup of tea in that bit. Just couldn't stand it. It was awful. Yeah. So yeah, really well done.
Good movie though. Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Ben? What have you been watching?
I watched a couple of random things this week. Don't ask me why. I don't know why I watched this. I watched Murder by Numbers, a 2002, the Sandra Bullock crime thriller thing. It's got Ryan Gosling in it.
Oh, I like that film.
See, I thought I liked this film. I remember seeing this and thinking,
it's like
Ryan
Copycat. It's in the same ilk as Copycat. It was like that 90s thriller murder. Yeah.
And it's got Michael Pitt in it as well. He's constantly pouting. No matter what the situation, he's pouting all the time. He's got the lips for it though, so we'll let him off. Ryan Gosling, he's wearing a red leather jacket. He's got like frosted tips, his hair. I'm baffled by this. This is probably the first Ryan Gosling movie I've seen where I've gone, sort it out, Ryan. What are you playing at here? What are you playing at? I didn't really enjoy it this time around. I found it was a film that like thought it was more intelligent. I can't even say the sentence, which makes me sound like an idiot. It was dumb and it thought it was smart, essentially. I don't know why I felt about Sandra Bullock's character, because they were trying to sort of impose this like certain character traits on her, and I don't know if I was completely convinced at any point. And also I didn't understand what the end goal of Ryan Gosling and Michael Pitt, these two high school
genius
boys, are.
Yeah,
Ryan Gosling's head doesn't look finished. Like if you look at some of the pictures, compare them to Blade Runner, well, that's a finished product.
It's working in head's progress. Not
quite. Yeah, and right, just think about. Have you seen this film, Luke?
I don't think I want to. No,
just think about this film and think. You look at the poster. You look at a few screenshots. You think, I know everything I need to know about this film. No, you don't, because she gets attacked by a baboon in the film. That happens.
Ryan's baboon.
There's that whole tranche of like 90s movies along those lines, like the one with Sigourney Weaver, the one I just mentioned, Copycat, and then there was like the Bone Collector with Angelina Jolie, they were all in the same mold.
Any movie with Ashley Judd in.
Yeah. And just like that slightly high class, more like not quite Silence of the Lambs, not quite Scream. Just like somewhere in the middle of the two, you know, he does look unfinished.
He does look odd. Also, there's a moment where Ryan Gosling licks Sandra Bullock's face, and apparently that was ad libbed. That's right, isn't it?
Ad licked is the term.
Ad licked,
yeah.
But thinking, oh, that's a bit weird. Having someone lick my face, and I'm not giving them permission for that. They ended up in a relationship after the film, so clearly
she
was like, lick that face. I got attacked by a baboon.
Crikey, I'd be in a relationship with Sandra Bullock, quite honestly. She's awesome.
Maybe not her character in this. There's something about the, as I said, the character traits they try and enforce on her, which is like trying to say, oh, she don't care.
Unlikable women. It was a thing in the 90s. You watch any 90s thriller and tell me that you like any of the women in any of them. It's a big thing.
Her colleagues were trying to, there was a thing where her colleagues were saying, she's the hyena. And I can't remember the reason they gave for why they called her a hyena, but I think it was something to do with hyenas have got like, female hyenas have got like a faux, like a fake, almost penis looking. And it was like too on the nose for the way they were trying to describe her character. It's like, yeah, she hasn't got a fake penis, but she might.
I don't think it.
What was that?
She is awesome, though. Like, she can pretty much own any film she's in, even if the film isn't that good. You know, like, she's just awesome. She sort of elevates a script, like, just insanely competent and talented lady. Interestingly, one of my favourite films with her in is The Proposal with Ryan Reynolds, in which she is a really unlikable, frosty kind of bitch, but she gets a chance to kind of warm up a little bit by the end. And it's a funny movie. She's funny. I like her a lot. She's very good.
I like her in Miss Congeniality as well. Even the sequel, I think. I've got a lot of love for that. So I saw that. And then I also saw the Coming to America sequel. Coming to America. That's genius, right? Who can believe it? Has anybody seen this yet? This came out.
I saw your rating on Letterboxd and I was like, oh, okay, interesting.
You know what? I actually liked it. And I've seen a lot of reviews on Letterboxd and a lot of people saying, some of the jokes are too on the nose, a lot of the callbacks. Sure. Pretty much every character from the original returns, every minor line and plot thread is kind of called upon in some way, shape or form. How are the barbershop dudes still alive, considering they're like 90 years old in 1988? But they are. So basically, it was all right. I liked it. It was funny. I had a lot of laughs.
I don't really remember the first one all that much. So
first one's great. First one is probably the first F-bombs I ever heard in movies. I remember feeling a bit like, oh, what's going on here then? Oh, they're swearing a lot. Oh, I shouldn't be watching this. So yeah, I've got a lot of love for it as one of those movies that kind of reminds me of my childhood in that way.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But that's it. That's all I've watched this week.
Other than A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yes, she does.
Let's dive in.
Okay. So, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night is a 2014 American horror western film written and directed by Anna Lily Armapour, promoted as the first Iranian vampire western. Well, that kind of makes sense. In the Iranian ghost town of Bad City, a place that reeks of death and loneliness, the townspeople are unaware that they're being stalked by a lonesome vampire. Just put loneliness twice. And lonesome, loneliness, lonely in the tagline there.
So IMDb has it at 7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics give it 96%. User score is 75%. Letterboxd, it's sitting at 3.7. I've got some choice Letterboxd reviews here. I normally go for funny Letterboxd reviews, but people weren't that dumb this time around. They were quite well considered. I mean, considered-ish. Carlo gave it 5 stars. He says, was expecting a vengeful vampire horror movie, but it got a cute romance with a banging soundtrack. Nick Helt said, I was just so incredibly bored. I didn't care about any of the characters. The pacing was awful. This was basically a drawn-out music video.
Sounds like a book review.
Yeah. Andre, he's got a great little profile picture here. He's very smiley. Aesthetically beautiful, but all for nothing. I've been trying to find any sort of meaning for this film, but I cannot. It's just pretty. 1/2 star. And then Sophie put, this is Twilight, but for art hoes of exquisite taste. 5 stars.
Wow. That's a damning indictment, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, she got 5 stars. She liked it. Yeah.
Twilight for art hoes. 5 stars. There we go.
I mean, what are your, have you guys seen, what's your first impressions for this film?
I like the comment about the banging soundtrack. Like, for me, this was all about the music. Like, I could have just listened to the soundtrack and just been in heaven all day. It was that kind of poppy, synthy, chromatics, like funky, pulpy, brilliant. Chromatic. The music was awesome, but it was mixed in with like the Iranian kind of pop songs and stuff as well. And that was interesting that it's like, you said it's kind of an American setting. It's like an Iranian-American setting. And I found it really hard to know where it was actually filmed. So I couldn't figure out if it was filmed in America, or I'm assuming not in Iran for obvious reasons. But it just gave off these really confusing vibes. You weren't quite sure where Bad City is and where it was meant to be. But I quite liked the ambiguity of that as well. And I think that's just like summed up the whole movie for me. It was just really ambiguous. It wasn't really one genre or another. It didn't feel like a Western to me, unless it's kind of like a subverted version of a kind of cowboy rolls into town, a mysterious Lone Ranger rolls into town and then walks off again. But it felt like it kind of borrowed from like Tarantino and Lynch and kind of Let the Right One In. And it was all a big mishmash with a load of kind of not as much cultural stuff as I thought there would be. Like, I was expecting perhaps more about kind of Iran or kind of certain like societal stuff that would be prescient, I guess. But it was just cool. I thought it was really pulpy and cool and compelling. I do think I got to the end of it and I was a bit like, would have liked something a little bit more to have ended with. Like, I didn't, it was a nice love story ending, unless of course she gets bored of him and eats him because he keeps asking her about broccoli. But it's just like, I wanted a bit more out of the story, but it looked and sounded amazing to me. Just loved the soundtrack.
Yeah. I think I agree with that soundtrack. I think it's the first time. Oh, it reminded me of how I felt when I first watched Drive, where I was like, right, I need to find out what these songs are immediately because I need to hear them again. So when you said chromatics, I felt like that as well. I kind of feel the same about the ending. I feel like it maybe fizzled out, whimpered out a little bit rather than anything really that interesting. But yeah, looks great. A nice unique take on the vampire genre as well. And it wasn't just like, oh, you kind of thought, okay, she's just going to stalk everybody and eventually kill them. That's what's going to happen. And the fact that she didn't really do that, I thought was quite...
It was a feminist kind of choice as well, because she only really ate and fed off of the diseased bodies of men who'd behaved badly. It's interesting as well, like the very opening scene where Arash, the male kind of lead, is like, he just randomly steals a cat from somebody's back garden or front yard or wherever it is and then just walks home with it. He walks over a bridge, and in the distance in the bridge there's this kind of ditch,
all the dead bodies,
and it's just full of dead bodies, and it's just like, oh, I nearly missed that, you know. It's just kind of casually.
I didn't even see it the first time I watched it. I only saw it this time. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Where have I come from?
I didn't notice it the first time until they ended up dumping a body there. Well, Arash ended up dumping a body there. That was the only... I was like, oh, that ditch is full of bodies. Didn't even notice the first time, right?
Isn't that crazy? So that's and then it sort of leads you down one path and then around the houses a bit. And I'll tell you what I thought was amazingly well done, though, and just elevated it a little bit higher than just kind of like art ho stuff, was like the way it was filmed. you never really got like a straight face-to-face scene. So they went to massive lengths to film this narrative through kind of looking through things or looking behind things or reflections of things. So they're either filmed through windows, like car windows, or in rear view mirrors, or in a mirror on the wall, or from around the corner as if someone's kind of peeking around the corner, or in a reflection in something, or from a distance, or like with a handheld camera kind of moving around. Like the different perspectives were so goddamn clever in kind of giving you this unsettling, like you see it really clearly. And there's a scene where she is invited into the drug dealer's house at the beginning, and you're wondering where this is all going. Cause I went into it blind. I didn't read any blurb, so I didn't know what it was going to be about. And that's the scene when you realize it's a vampire movie, if you didn't know that already. And there's just, you know, he's kind of wadging all the coke he can get up his nose and having a boogie, and wadging. And she's just she's just
gonna watch this coke, you know, oh, as much as I could get. He had lines, like he had loads of lines all the way around the table, so it's like no matter where he was sat, he'd always
pre-chop.
Have something.
yeah exactly.
I respect that.
And just there's little moments where she's just kind of fiddling with his drum kit, so to speak. And it's just like the way that that whole scene is shot is from so many different angles and perspectives. It's crazy disorienting. And I loved that. I thought it was so well done. And scenes in the car and stuff, it's just, yeah, that for, I've noticed that and the music more than anything else, I think.
Yeah.
It just really kind of left an impression on me, I think, visually.
Yeah. It's a weird one. I mean, this is the kind of film where someone had bigged it up to me like so much the first time I watched it. Because on the face of it, it's my kind of perfect film. It's kind of quirky. It's got that Eraserhead aesthetic. And I really like Annalee Amirpour. She has like a really great Instagram page where she posts lots of stuff about David Lynch and lots of cool directors, lots of cool people. But the first time I watched it, I found it. You know, when someone's big stuff in them so much, your expectations aren't really set properly. I found it a little bit vacuous the first time. So I didn't quite understand what... And I think it was because the plot was just far too light for me. But this time, I think I enjoyed it a lot more. I think I just kind of settled into what it was. I still think it's paced a little bit too slowly. But it was an enjoyable experience, really.
Yeah, the pace is an issue. But then I was thinking about that, like how else would you do it? Like there's a pivotal scene where Arash's father kind of, he kicks him out of the house and he takes all his money and goes to the hooker and kind of basically forces her to do heroin. And it's a really uncomfortable scene where he kind of ties her wrists together with his own belt and injects her and then injects himself with the same needle, which just made me like, ah. And it's just horribly abusive. It's so abusive. And just, I'm not quite sure how you move from that to something else at a more of a kind of pacey speed. Do you know what I mean? Without like demeaning that whole scene. And there were a couple of moments like that where Arash is at the party and he's dancing and he's done drugs and he doesn't really know where he is. And you're supposed to kind of feel for like how vulnerable he is, and it's really dreamy but also a bit unsettling because you just feel really bad for him because he's completely out of his depths, all of these wealthy people that have got money for coke and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I'm not sure whether it needed to be a faster movie and needed to be faster paced, because I think what it was trying to do was just a couple of character studies really of kind of life and how people bump into each other and then move on. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a kind of breakneck speed thing. Like the more I think about
there's one scene that was like 5 minutes on like one shot. and I was like, come on, like, I don't know. I understand. I kind of agree, but it's more like of a tone.
Kind of struck me that like life in Bad City had like ground to a halt essentially. And that everything was like dilapidated, and the fact that these slow sort of studies of life were kind of supposed to reflect that in a way, I guess.
I wonder if he gets that from David Lynch, because she talks about David Lynch a lot, and Eraserhead are some of the slowest It's one of the slowest paced movies I've ever seen in my
life. I was going to say, like, and just really indulgent. Like, he can just does what he wants to do for the sake of what he wants to try and get that feel across. And that disorienting kind of, one minute it's like a family saga or drama, and then the next minute it's like, what the fuck is happening? And it's like, it's obviously a very deliberate choice, I think, to kind of try and recreate that. And if he can be indulgent, then why can't she? You know, I think that I liked that. Yeah. I thought stylistically it worked.
Yeah.
Do you think this film would have been as effective if it wasn't a vampire movie? If you took that element out of the of the story?
I don't know. If it feels quite central to the whole thing, I think. I'm not too sure, really. If you took it out, it'd be like one of Shane Meadows' more experimental films, I think.
Yeah, that's what I think.
This is Iran instead of
this is England. Iran. So it's quite a small cast as well. So you've got Sheila Band as the girl, Arash Mirandi as Arash, Marshall Manesh as Hussein, as his dad, isn't it?
Hussein. I think so, yeah. Either his dad or his
Saeed is like the drug dealer. The drug dealer looks like the guy from Diane Ford, doesn't he? He looks like the same guy. For a second, I was like, is that now? I mean, it's not, but nearly with the sort of flat top mullet face tattoo.
He was actually very good in that role, I think. Like, although he was a nasty drug dealer and I couldn't wait for him to get his comeuppance, he did it incredibly well. And we could have probably done with seeing a little bit more of that and like just escalated his nastiness a bit higher.
Having like a central antagonist in the sort of the whole, for the proceedings probably would have worked a little bit better, I think.
Because
it was nice to hate him and then he was dead before you kind of knew it.
Which was like important so that you knew it was a vampire movie and that was like his set piece, but at the same time, if he'd been worked on a bit more, I think it could have perhaps been a bit more satisfying as well. Like, it was satisfying because he was a prick. But he was also like a drug dealing bully. He wasn't like a murderer or anything.
His car.
How many
days I worked for that car? 2,000.
I mean, who drives a car like that anyway without getting it nicked after
a bad city?
I do wonder if he stole that car. I'm watching it again, second time.
Yeah.
They were supposed to think that he worked for 2,191 days to save up for that car, but he stole everything else.
Yeah, he stole the earrings, didn't he? And he didn't even think twice about it. Yeah, so
I think he might have stolen that car. We just not implied.
Just going around, stealing cats, stealing earrings, stealing cars. Nothing matters to this guy.
Stealing, well, I mean, like, what's his name? James Dean's looks.
But like at the end of the movie, he realizes that his kind of brand new girlfriend of like 2 days has murdered his dad, and he still drives off into the night with her. So he's got
his lot dad, of learning to do. In a way, was a burden upon him. When he kicked his dad out and went, here's all the money, here's all the drugs, and he went and his dad left and was like dead in less than 12 hours. What's wrong with you? For God's sake, have some self-respect. In 12 hours.
It's never explicitly stated that he knows it's the same cat. He could, that moment of realization on his face is him going, "What? I've got the same cat."
I stole the same cat. Now you've stolen the cat off me. That's too far.
Yeah.
But the cat had like a psychic link with the girl, right? She knows that things are going wrong with Arash's dad. Because the cat is like present in the room. Cat's meant
to, Hussein thinks that the cat is the reincarnation of his dead wife.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I wonder if it is the reincarnation of his dead wife. Yeah. Who knows?
Could be. It was definitely watching out for people. Like.
Yeah.
So if we just go through the plot, I guess, as quickly as we can. So obviously we've covered a bit of it where Arash at the very beginning, opening credits, steals a cat. He's got a heroin addicted father who's like always sat on the floor, just have a little go in the armchair. And there's a drug dealing pimp named Saeed, who's obviously being a bit of a bastard. He's owed a load of money. So he takes Arash's prized car in possession. And then Arash gets really angry and punches a wall. Which, you know,
we've all been there.
Instant regret, you know, we're going to punch that fucking wall. Oh, no. He does break his hand, doesn't he? Because he gives the doctor later on.
Yeah, he's got a cast for the rest of the movie, I think.
That's right.
Very similar.
So there's some other minor characters. There's like a little boy who's wearing a lot of layers. I just kept thinking he must be ever so worn. He's got like
he looks quite old, though. Like he had the kind
of turtleneck and blazer combo, which is you know, a great combo.
But he looks like a university lecturer. Like he's
bless him. Just old beyond his years.
Horticulture.
So we got that dude. Yeah, and I guess like there's not really any other named characters in it, are there? It's just not that
Addie,
many.
I think her name is Attie, the prostitute.
Yeah, Amir Poore herself, isn't it? She plays that character.
Really?
Does she play the other one? She's in it.
I knew she did the skateboarding scenes because she's a skateboarder. I knew she did the skateboarding scenes as what's a flavor?
I think
girl.
She was a character at the party, the one who had like the Day of the Dead face.
She's definitely in it. Hang on, I might have got this confused. Yeah. Oh no, yeah, no, sorry. Attie is Mozan Mano.
I think
misread that.
I think that was someone at the party, I think.
Skeleton Party Girl. There we go. She's in it, but
and the cat's called Masuka. The cat's got a name. So
good name.
Refer to name. Masuka from now on.
Masuka, let's say.
Bazooka that veruca.
Oh my god.
Bazooka that warts. That's how you got to ask for it. If you go into the pharmacy, you got to go, have you got any bazooka that veruca, please? Because otherwise they just won't know what you mean. If you ask for a bazooka, they just lift up a shutter and they've just got loads of guns and stuff. Yeah. Arms dealers. That's what happens that's what happens in Bad City. So Arash has got a job. He's like what? Alan Titchmarsh. Does a bit of gardening on the side.
He's the odd job man, isn't he? He's the one that gets bossed around.
Yeah,
by the wealthy family.
She goes, "Come up here and tune in my TV."
Yep.
What kind of TV was it? Was it a CRT TV? Is that what it needed tuning in? I can't remember.
I'm not sure. But what was going on with this? So that's Shader, this woman. Has she got like some sort of like thing? What's that thing on her nose?
She's had a nose job.
She's had a nose job, right?
Yeah, and that's the implication is that she's trying to fix her nose. I think I believe.
I thought it was those little bands you put across your nose when you like snore.
My immediate was like, oh, she's had a nose job, which would make sense with the context of her being a rich girl with lots of
that. That makes a lot more sense because why would she wear something to stop herself?
Or she just snores really heavily
all day. Yeah, exactly. And then he steals some earrings, which are just there on the table. I think, at least go and have a look around in her drawers for something else. Don't just take it to the table. It's obvious, then, isn't it? It's obvious.
Yeah. Just go look around in her drawers for something else.
Just go look around in her drawers. That's much more respectable. And then we're kind of introduced to the girl. Because Saeed, the drug dealer, is just wandering around the streets at night. Just walking around. And... does she follow him or does she just like walk past him and then?
Well, no, he's also a pimp. So he meets up with Attie, the prostitute. And there's a nasty scene where he kind of encourages her to suck him off in the car and then gets kind of distracted because the shadow of the girl is standing behind watching.
Yeah.
Then he kind of pushes Attie out of the car and drives off. And then she clearly kind of follows him home. She's watching to see she's obviously kind of prowling the streets. She's hungry. She kind of sees, she chooses men to eat, not women. And then she chooses men who act in like questionable that. Ways, which is why she asks
you
the little boy when she,
polo packet.
When she meets the little boy though, she says, "Are you a good boy? You know, because otherwise she's going to eat him."
So, I like that because it kind of made me think
I ain't a rebel.
She's just making sure he doesn't develop and grow into an asshole by
instead it's going to be a traumatized person.
Her voice when she was scaring him like scared me a little bit.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm going to try my best to be a good boy now. Sorry, don't get me, please. So yeah, she goes back to Saeed's gaff, where he's doing a load of drugs and putting on some tunes.
And it's really shit music as well. What I loved about that scene is that, like, the music throughout the rest of the film is so tasteful and, like, cool and, like, indie and, you know, hipster, I guess, in a way, in a little bit of a way. And then he just puts on this, like hardcore techno or whatever it is, and he's just like having a bit of a club night in his room, and the contrast is so bang on. I thought it was really clever.
You find out a lot about a character just by what music they're listening to. You see?
You can. I mean, I like a bit of techno, don't worry, get me wrong, but
he's a terrible I just kept thinking he's a terrible host, because he comes in and he just starts going about his business, keep all the cocaine for himself for like
no he
ages.
Did offer a line he did offer
he
a line.
He did, but you know, the moment had gone, I thought. You know, I was like, all right, no, don't bother.
You're just doing it to be polite. I can tell you don't really want to.
I've made you're giving you a little line there, see? A tiny little line there. You'll like that. Delightful. Are you being selfish with your cocaine, Saeed?
What is that cape hood thing that the girl is wearing?
It's called a chador. It's chador. It's a traditional dress, I believe. So
it's really cool, and it really suits the kind of vampire.
It does. I thought that it was really effective, wasn't it? Because it's sort of like a cape, but not. It was kind of. Also, I don't know whether there's a piece in that as well about reclaiming, kind of religious clothing or traditional clothing a little bit as well, or not reclaiming it, but kind of working it into a new genre as well. And I know there's a lot of debate around kind of clothes that women wear in certain countries and stuff. But I really liked that it had a kind of, I don't know, cool, dark, kind of bit like Batman edge to it, really.
It's a really cool character design with like the striped top and on a skateboard as well.
The skateboard was awesome.
It looked very intimidating when the, was it chador, did you say? Chador was down, but at one point when she was skating, it was flowing behind her and you could kind of see.
And the
she
line
was just
of
a woman
that...
in jeans and a t-shirt.
But underneath. It was so smooth as well, though, right? Like when she's just that shape, just smoothly going along on the board. I loved that. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah. So in this scene, Saeed's coming onto her. He likes putting his fingers in people's mouths, doesn't he? And you knew as soon as he started doing that, it wasn't going to end well for him. And she bites his finger off. Before, obviously, she shows her fangs first, and I like the little sound effect of when the fangs came out.
All good vampire movies need a little moment, don't they? They do it with rattlesnakes in films, so why not with vampires?
It reminded me of the noise when Wolverine's claws come out.
I don't know how they do that. Sorry. It's not like a butter like that pops them out. Like
maybe there is.
Do we have some things like a cat, like it will spread its paws, right, and the claws will come out. What? Even Wolverine, how does he, what's the connection? How do you make it come out? You don't have to think think happy thoughts. Maybe it's just the scent of blood or something. I don't know.
Maybe it's
very like switchblade-y. I feel like he's got a little switch on the back of the neck. Popping out.
Like an action man.
You know those switches that used to move the eyes?
That would be really bad in a combat situation, wouldn't it?
Wait a minute. Yeah. Hang on. Let me press my button. So she bites his finger off, then she puts the severed finger in his mouth. How do you like it?
Just desserts, I thought. Just
like
desserts.
It. Loves himself. It's the best thing I've ever tasted.
You know what? I've gone way more Bristol on this one just because you're here, Ben, than I normally would. Just noticing
it's
it.
It's good to hear. I think I go pretty Bristol on the podcast as well. I think in my day-to-day life, I don't know, maybe. Maybe not so much. Others would say differently.
There's a sommelier at the vine, the ivy, whatever it's called.
So she kills Saeed, sucks his blood. And as she leaves, she's pretty much doesn't care about leaving the crime scene. She's even got blood all around her mouth as she leaves. Mm-hmm. And Arash sees her leaving as well. But he's come to offer the earrings he's stolen for the car. And he's like, score, I get both. And he does. He keeps
and
both.
Some drugs. And a nice briefcase.
And a whole briefcase full of drugs, money, and a gun. Which, you know, is nice. All the things you want.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, Saeed, maybe not the pimp element, but I think he wants to be that kind of respected, to whatever degree, kind of character, right? He wants to be bad, and he's not. He's a quite an innocent soul. It's in when he's on drugs later on, that kind of innocent, childlike nature comes out, which is why he doesn't get eaten. But he's kind of taking some of Saeed's identity when he takes the briefcase.
I was cross with him for that as well. When he starts offering drugs to the girls at the party, I was like, oh, come on, you're better than this. And it's like you say, he just wanted to be impressive because presumably because of like his social status, he's just been completely invisible. And even the girl that employs him bosses him around, like does a farm boy, Princess Bride kind of jobby on him. And it's like, it's just... she doesn't consider him seriously at all. And then the sad thing is that he kind of gets wasted at that party and then kind of makes a move on her and she's still not interested in him. And then she sort of drapes herself around a slightly higher status friend. And it's just like, for him, he just wants to succeed in life. And that's why he's got that silly car. And that's why he dresses like James Dean. And like, he's got aspirations for his life that are above the shitty deal he's been given. And he thinks that maybe that's how you do it. That get that wealth and status is by doing the same things that the other guy did. And actually, I was cross with him. as he would be. But I was quite glad he sort of didn't go down that whole full-blown, turned into a nasty guy in the character arc. I thought it was good that he didn't.
Yeah, so he's at the party dressed as Dracula and he gets coerced into taking one of the ecstasy pills. It was one of that. He's selling the pills as well, isn't he? Because I know he's got cocaine, but was he selling the pills?
He's got everything in the suitcase. Oh, yeah.
Don't try your own product. Jesus. On the job as well. That's not very good. So what happens? He just ends up roaming the streets.
Yeah, he kind of turns. He gets lost. He's like a little toddler wandering around looking at lights. Which,
just standing there gazing up.
And then the girl turns up, and what? I can't even remember.
Well, that's a nice bit as well of subversion there, because like the whole idea of a girl walks home alone at night, you immediately think, oh God, here we go. We're gonna see a vulnerable young woman drunk walking home from a club at night or something, and something bad happens to her. And actually, it's the drunk, vulnerable man walking home from a party and he's lost and he doesn't know what's happening to him. And this woman comes along and kind of takes him back to hers. And it's a real nice little subversion of that kind of, I guess, trope is the right word for that.
My
house isn't far from here.
Yeah, well, he can't walk. So she sticks him on a skateboard and wheels him home.
Humiliating. That's humiliating. Just down on a skateboard, getting pushed home. Oh, this is my lowest moment. You'd like that, would you? Yeah, while dressed as Dracula?
Yeah, why not?
Is it before this that the girl sees Hossein like on the street as well, and she's like taunting him, like copying him from across the street, and he ends up running away?
Oh yeah,
I think that was just before. I can't remember that bit. I don't remember that. I remember Hossein is following Atti around a lot, and he won't let her go, which. Kind of traditional creepy old man behavior, but that's quite unsettling as well.
Yeah, that's true. Back at the girl's crib, she's playing all of her tunes for him. What is that song she plays? I need to know, because on the soundtrack there's quite a few songs, and is it the White Lies song?
I don't know, but it was good. I liked it. She's got a good vinyl collection.
Nice. She's got like collections of lots of stuff. I think she must have been around for a long time, so she's got like a big stack of watches, and there's like maps on the wall, so I imagine she's probably moved around a lot. There's a lot of cool little set design sort of add extra details to her character. It's quite cool
with all the watches. I just thought, all right, Del Boy, she does the slowest turn I've ever seen in film either. It's the slowest turn. It's like, it takes, how long does that turn take? It's a good 30-second turn.
That's your Lynch, though. That's your, like, and actually those moments where she is moving slowly and you know something bad's going to happen, like the music kind of underneath all of that, the slow bass build that just creeps up really, really cleverly. It does work. It's like definitely creeping dread, I think, rather than like outright horror. And it is a bit, again, it's a bit like Let the Right One In. It's that very slow, kind of deliberate... quiet horror that they call it. I think they do, don't they?
I could never hear him.
to speak up, for God's sake. I think that song is White Lies, and it's called Death. So I think if you want to listen to it again, that's what it's called. What?
Okay,
speak
up.
Yeah. So they have their quiet moment. What does she like? Is there a moment where she's like looking at his neck? Because in the description,
she resists
his exposed neck.
Even I was tempted by that neck.
Oh, come on. That is the most neck I've ever seen.
I don't know what it is about movie podcasts and boys and necks, but over at thenecronomy.com, Josh Rubin and James Sabata spent 20 minutes talking about Michelle Pfeiffer's neck in Batman Returns. So it's just like, I'm on another podcast with...
What's going on with her neck in Batman Returns?
Michelle Pfeiffer in that film... I was very young. Yeah.
It was very formative, clearly, and her neck was a big part of that.
Yeah.
It does make me chuckle.
You know that she whipped off all those mannequin heads, Michelle Pfeiffer. She whipped them off in one take.
Goodness.
Yeah, I saw that, and I saw them like all like applauding all her after she did it as well.
I wouldn't cheer. I'd be terrified of her.
And then she got in the litter tray afterwards.
Oh God, Luke.
Oh, good.
She's still in character then.
Still in character then, what? Yeah, so and then what happens after that? They meet the next night, don't they? And the girl's talking about all the terrible things she's done, and he's like, I've done terrible things. And it's like, it's not a competition. I've done more terrible things than you. I've murdered people. And he's like, oh, I nicked some earrings once.
And a cat. God, he nicked a cat. I do think that's quite a big gripe.
Yeah, that's worse, yeah. That's
and a car, probably. And...
Yeah.
And he gives her the earrings, and then she's like, my ears aren't pierced. And he's, but then does she suggest piercing the ears?
Yeah. She pops
her ears. Are they... I feel like he does burn the...
It's quite a cool scene. It feels kind of like old school... like kind of classic cinema romance where he's kind of like lighting the pin.
It would have been different if they just went down to Claire's accessories to get her ears pierced.
No, see, that's the scene, like, for me, where I kind of reality started to kick in a little bit. Like if some bird that you've only just met kind of says, oh, thanks for these nice earrings, I can't wear them, but would you stab holes in my ears with the safety pin?
Yeah. I think I'd go in with the earring. Like, I'd use the earring to do the piercing.
I think most dudes would be like, I'm all right, actually. Let's just leave it for a bit and think about it.
Like, you're already getting stabbed.
And she's so weird and intense, and he doesn't even... Well, he sort of does flinch a little bit. Like, there's a moment on his face where he's just a bit like, all right. He's either so naive he doesn't realize that that's a bit fucked up, or it's just not quite realistic, I think, for how a guy might respond in that situation. Like, I have a feeling that if I was on a date with someone and I asked them to randomly stab holes in my ears, I'd probably like not be up on a second date.
But he's trying to play up to that kind of bad man role still, though, isn't he? I think a little bit. So
maybe. Yeah,
I mean, maybe you wouldn't stab someone.
You got anything else pierced? Tongue? Yeah. Belly button? Yeah. I'll do it all while I'm here.
Maybe a tattoo.
Maybe a little stick and poke as well. The backdrop here is like there's a lot of backdrops of like the oil refinery and stuff, isn't there?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It always makes for good cinema, doesn't it? The arms that kind of go up and down, they're kind of doing whatever they do.
Looking for the oil, I don't know. But yeah, it was quite interesting. Yeah, what are they doing? Daniel Day-Lewis
refining
knows.
Oil, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fining here.
And then what's next? After that, that's their second date, which was lovely. They'll be talking about that for years. And then later on is when... So this is when the girl and Atti, the prostitute who worked for Saeed, she gets followed home by the woman. But then they have a nice little... Do they have a drink together or something?
They have a bit of a chat, don't they? Atti sees the watch that belonged to the drug dealer.
That's right, yeah.
And kind of says, you know, finds out that she's got more to her than meets the eye.
Like a transformer.
Yeah. Whoa, this isn't this kind of film. Yeah, there's a big fight scene with Megatron. And then what's the next one?
And then I think, is this a bit where Hossein is because he hadn't any drugs in ages, and he starts to think that the cat is the reincarnation of his dead wife.
Oh, and he's having proper withdrawals, isn't he? Yeah. And goes a bit, I was starting to worry for the cat, because I'm not a huge cat fan, but I didn't necessarily want anything to happen to the cat either, because it was a nice, pretty cat.
Who knows?
And I was starting to feel for the cat's safety a little bit.
Yeah.
So Arash, like, has just had enough. He's like, I've had up to hear of you and your heroine, so you're going to get what you want. Load of money, load of drugs.
Get out.
And I'm going to sling your hook, which he does.
Pretty much.
Takes the cat with him as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, he says, Arash is like, I don't want it anymore. And I wondered about that. And there's some significance to that that I probably missed.
Like, take your wife with you. I mean, cat.
Yeah, well, yeah, what a peculiar cat thing. What's if you've got your reincarnated wife as a cat, where do you take her? To the, see the prostitute? Like, it's just such a weird,
it is weird.
Weird scenario.
Maybe he's punishing her, though, because he said to her when he was smashing up her pictures, you left me like this. Maybe there's an element of, like, punishing her for something.
Do we know what happened to her? Did she pass away?
Or? I'm presuming she just died, and then he made that her problem. Rather than, sorting his life out and being
Are you? Well, I'm going to go do a little heroin. See how you like that.
Exactly. And my son can just fucking look after himself. But it's all about me.
Selfish. Obviously, the distressing scene you mentioned before with him and Atty. But then the girl turns up while it's afterwards, isn't it? Like, they've fallen asleep.
Yeah, he kind of goes to sleep with her, cuddling her. And it's like, at that moment, any kind of sympathy I might have had for him was just gone. And they were trying to sort of reclaim it a little bit by, he's obviously very lonely and just wanted some human comfort, but didn't have to be a nasty scumbag in order to do it.
I'm so lonely, I'm going to be abusive and
I'm going to force you to take heroin. Yeah, it's just, I mean, we all get like that sometimes. It just, I understand.
Yeah.
And then he gets what he deserves is that the woman, the girl, I keep calling her the girl, but she is just called the girl.
That's her name on the
vampire girl. She turns up and kills him.
And that's like the most climactic scene in the film. And then everything from then is just like a quiet slope down, isn't it? And maybe they could have made more of that, perhaps, if that was the peak, I think, the crescendo.
Because it kind of felt like after this scene, when Atty helps to dispose of the body as well, they take the cat and leave, it kind of felt like there was nothing. It kind of, the film didn't really know exactly where it was going to go now. Because I know Arash and the girl decide to run away, but it felt like it would have had more impact if they were running away from something or from somebody. I guess, sure, they're running away from the fact that she's essentially killed more people, but it doesn't seem like there's any law to really worry about.
There was no real threat to her, was there? That was the thing. Like she was just this kind of, she just sort of moves through the world, dishing out judgment and eating whatever and whoever she chooses. And there didn't seem to be any real threat to her. Like, none of the, which I, on one hand, I quite liked. There was none of that, like, sunlight bollocks, or although it's noticeable you only ever see her in the dark, so you just that's implied.
I quite like that, the fact that there was none of the vampire lore,
none of the lore associated with it. But at the same time, it's like, are they just going to be, is it an actual Western, and are they just now drifters going from place to place with some country music boofing along in the back, or is there something more sinister driving them on or away? But then maybe it doesn't, you know, maybe again it's a style choice, and that ambiguity is like that kind of calling card of hers. So,
yeah, it's weird. I don't know how I feel about the ending. There seems to be a moment where it's almost as if Arash is making the decision. Is he just going to let her, is he not going to bring up the death of his father, and is he just going to go with her and accept her for who she is or not? I guess that's kind of like the emotional kind of ending to it, but I don't know.
I mean, they're going to have therapy for years about that, aren't they? They're going to have issues. Yeah. It's going to come up in arguments.
It's going to come up. The longer
they leave it. He's going to bury it down, and in 10 years, they'll have a big argument, and he'll go,
and he'll throw it
kill
back
my
in
dad
face.
From you!
Yeah,
about someone will bring him broccoli, and that'll come out.
My dad!
Yeah. Remember when you ate my dad?
No?
Yeah.
I did that for you.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, now you're bringing up Let the Right One In, I can't help but compare the endings to both of them. And I just, Let the Right One In is one of my favourite movies.
But that
maybe
has the emotional, that had much more of an emotional punch for me. And I don't know why, maybe it's because they're so much younger, they're children, and they're kind of the innocence implied made that whole scenario much more satisfying. Or just, there was much more of a slow build of danger for her as well. Like, if she didn't eat, you could see how much in distress she actually was and how much at risk she was of dying. You don't really get that with the girl in this movie. She just seems to be quite invulnerable.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be...
There's true conflict in that film, though. With this film, it feels like the conflict is kind of... doesn't quite ever rise to the surface. It's always kind of like there, but quite hidden. And
maybe that's why people in the negative reviews are saying it is quite empty, or it feels quite vacuous, or it doesn't have the kind of concern. There's no element of concern throughout it.
I think vacuous is the wrong word, because that just implies it's all surface, and it's like there were some real themes here, and some quite deep themes to do with like social status and the nature of like accepting someone for who they are, and kind of stuff that women have to put up with, and that feminist angle as well. But I just wonder whether it needed notching up a little bit more for me, like just a little bit more of that, and really kind of hammer that home. It just fell shy a little bit of the bar, perhaps.
Yeah. And then that's how it ends. They ride off into the nighttime, into the next movie. Well, there is, I don't know if it's the next movie, but there's a comic book series. I don't know if that goes into
deeper.
Yeah, she was. Did she release graphic novels at the same time? Or I read somewhere.
Yeah, it was a 6-part graphic novel series. It was in 2014, so that's the same year. Explores the girl's backstory. Very interesting.
Yeah,
definitely read that.
What is going on with her back? I always thought about that. So we got a bit of name game. I don't know. I don't know if you know what it become quite clear, Gemma, when we do the first one. Basically, I'm going to give you a little bit about a film I saw that was very similar to this film, and you have to tell me the name of the film, if that makes
blimey.
Sense.
Okay.
Don't worry, it's not as...
I was going to say, you're expecting a lot from my very frazzled brain.
This game does not expect a lot from anybody.
You'll see what we mean. So this film I saw the other night was about a film. It was a film about a girl who walks home alone at night. But it turned out she was part bird. Any idea what that one's called? What? So a girl walking home alone at night, and she's flapping her feathers and shouting in the way that birds do.
Shouting?
Yeah, well, what do birds do?
They don't bark. I have no idea. I have no idea.
What do birds do?
They don't bark.
A girl squawks home alone at night.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good movie. The silver one I watched, which maybe doesn't quite work, it's about a little mammal. A little mammal that walks around the capital of Italy at night. Not as good, this one, but it's decent.
A little mammal.
Are you trying to make up the title of the movie with like totally unrelated things?
That's the name.
The girl walks around Verona at night or something like that.
Close.
Okay.
Not as smart as that. So it's about a little mammal. You see him everywhere in trees, stealing nuts.
A squirrel.
If you say it properly, squirrel.
A squirrel walks around Rome at night.
The squirrel walks Rome alone at night. Pretty decent.
I've like forgotten what the film's called. I need to get it in front of me.
I forgot what my own name is now.
A squirrel. Is that what you're saying, Luke?
Film. Squirrel. Squirrel. A squirrel.
Squirrel.
Friends.
Squirrel.
If I'm saying it in polite conversation, I say squirrel. Sure. But to make it work for this game,
squirrel.
I have to change it.
Squirrel. Yeah.
Okay. So this is one I watched. pretty good. I thought this one was the best out of the bunch. It's a film about a girl who has a dog named after a famous Macaulay Culkin sequel, and she only walks that dog at night.
Oh my god.
A girl walks. What?
Home Alone.
A girl walks Home Alone at night? It's the same.
Close, it's the sequel.
A girl walks home alone
at night.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Nothing happens, she just takes the dogs for a long walk. This other one was pretty nonsensical. This is one about a girl who stays up all night and she keeps banging on about the Google internet browser.
Girl walks Chrome alone.
Well, close, but she doesn't go anywhere. She's is in a bedroom talking. I mean,
a girl browses Chrome alone.
I was going to go browse.
It's about a girl. She's I don't want to say the word, but she's saying lots about this browser. You could say it rhymes with walk.
Talks Chrome alone at night.
The girl who talks Chrome alone at night. That's the word. And this last one, I mean, this was a banger. This was about a girl who stayed up all night trying to sell her hundreds and hundreds of doggy copies of the third Mad Max movie.
Wait, the third one? That's
the third one.
Thunderdome. A girl.
She's trying to sell loads of copies. She's got tons of these copies of Mad Max 3. She's trying to get rid of them to anyone.
Sells Thunderdome at night?
Just say what you're going to say, and I'll put you in the right place.
A girl sells Thunderdome at night?
Well, she didn't sell it. Well, she did sell it, but she's, you know, Del Boy in it.
Oh, my days.
A girl. Flogs.
Rhymes with walks.
Hawks.
Yeah. The girl who hawks Mad Max 3 Beyond Thunderdome alone at night.
Yeah. I think you need to have a strong word with yourself, Luke. Go and sit in the corner for 5 minutes and assess what you've done.
We're well past that.
There have been some bizarre name games, Luke, but that might be the most bizarre of all of them. And I respect you for that. I tip my hat. And more of the same next week, please.
Good use of the word hawks, though. I need to get that in somewhere. I think it's an underused word.
Yeah. What did I say? Cells. I really wasn't coming in what the point of the game was. But yeah, there we go. I'm glad you had fun, Luke. Even though I read it.
So we need to rate the movie. We normally go between A and F, but you could choose whatever rating scale you like.
On the alphabet, I'm assuming, not the periodic table.
we tend to stick with the alphabet. You could go periodic table if that's your bag.
Yeah, no, it's not. I'm not good at science. So which is the lower end and which is the higher end?
I tend to see F as the lower end.
Okay, myself. Working up towards A.
It's to A plus. A plus is the
We do pluses and minuses as well.
Yeah. Very Bristol. Yep.
A.
Arca E. Mind.
Don't do an E though.
I am going to give it a solid C plus.
Interesting. I thought you were going to go a little higher than that.
I thought you'd go a little bit higher.
I wanted more from the story, but I loved the look and the feel, and I would definitely watch it again. I would definitely hunt down the soundtrack, but I wanted more from the story. Just needed certain parts of it, just needed ramping up a little bit, perhaps, or focusing more on for a bit longer.
Yeah. Cool. How about you, Ben?
I might go a tiny little bit higher. So I think I'll go for a B minus. Because, I liked it. I think, the third act possibly lacked a tad for me in terms of, like, the narrative. It kind of tailed off, fizzled out. But apart from that, I think it was a nice, unique take on a vampire movie. Looks great, sounds great. It was good times.
So B?
B minus, mate.
B minus, okay. Well, I was going to go straight with B. I think, the story is a bit lacking, but I think the aesthetics and the tone are so unique and, like, palpable that they're difficult not to it's difficult not to kind of love that. It's like with Drive. That's like, you mentioned Drive earlier. That's like so based around the aesthetic of it. That's kind of the point of it. And I do love it for that reason as well. So I'm going to give it a B. Last time I watched it, I was like a D. I just didn't really sort of take to it. But this time, it's gone up. It's gone up in my estimation. So it's yeah, there we go.
Grower yeah. and a shower.
Very nice. Very, yeah. very, very nice. There we go.
Cool. All right. That's that. Thanks for listening. You can become a patron over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Kovach Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. Join the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a right horror dude. Also,
thank you very much.
Thanks to our guest, Gemma Moore. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Where can we find your stuff, all your stuff and things?
Now's
all
the time stuff to hawk stuff and things. Your wares.
Ooh, I'm going to hawk my wares. Okay. Easiest place to find all of my stuff is on Amazon at the moment. Just stick my name into Google and I come up in various different places. Social media. I'm all over it, everywhere. Apart from TikTok, because I don't know what that is. I've done that yet. And you can also hear quite a lot of my short stories have been adapted by the No Sleep podcast. You can go to their website, put my name into the search bar to bring up a list, or you can just listen to the whole back catalogue of 15 seasons now, like literally thousands of short, scary stories. I also have a podcast that I co-write and I'm in. It stars Kate Siegel, called Calling Darkness, which is a horror comedy podcast, if you like that sort of thing. And I'm a voice actor in various other different shows. You can look me up on Podchaser, and I've got a growing list of kind of appearances and bits and pieces. But if you want reading stuff, definitely go to Amazon. And you can also find me on GemmaAmoreAuthor.com.
Sweet. Thank you very much. Yeah, what are we doing next week, Ben?
I think Andy's back and we're going to be doing Jacob's Ladder.
Okay, cool. I've seen that in ages.
I've never seen it. What's it about? Window cleaner. Second week on the trot. I've made that joke.
Well, it's classic.
Enjoy it. Yeah. It's coming back next week. Same jokes, same time, same place.
Cool. All right, guys. We're going to end the recording there. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.